Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this lecture tonight. The topic of this lecture is scientific proof to the Jewish Torah. We will try to prove in the next hour or so, scientifically. Hopefully, we'll be able not to leave any doubts after this lecture for someone who may have a doubt here, that the Torah that the Jewish people received 3,319 years ago really happened. They really got it from the Creator of the world. If we will have some extra time, we will try to touch what's the purpose of this whole acceptance of the Torah. But I doubt that if we may have extra time, but at least we get the proof. Maybe one day we'll meet again soon, and we'll be able to take it from there. If you have any questions, every time I show a slide, when I'm about to move to the next one, please don't hesitate. Raise your hand, and you can ask all your questions regarding to that particular subject that we're speaking about. And today, up to now, there are more than 80,000 religions and cults in the world. As we speak, every day, every week, there are new people coming and claim that they have some kind of a truth, and they form another cult or another religion. In the beginning, it's all cults. Some of them grow so much that it becomes an official religion. Christianity was a cult in the beginning, a few hundred people. Once the Romans decided to join them, they became millions of people, and the rest is history. Islam, when it started, there was just few families. And then Muhammad was going from one Arab to another with a sword, with his gang, until a lot of them had no choice, and they had to surrender, and they became Muslims. Today, you have 1.5 billion Muslims. We mainly will speak about Judaism, but in order for me to prove that Judaism is a valid religion, and it was received from the Creator of the world, and it's not the word of the rabbis, as some of you may think. It's not a history book, as some of you may think also. And it was given to the Jewish nation in front of millions of witnesses. All these statements that I'm making, obviously, my job tonight will be to prove it scientifically. If you're not convinced, don't let me go on. Challenge what I showed. If you're not 100% sure, if I see silence and I move on, that means you're all convinced. All right? So, in order for us to prove that a specific book that someone claims is the Word of God, we have to check it very carefully. It's not just another recommendation about life, to eat healthy, or to find a better job. We're not talking about something that with or without it you can still survive. We are talking here the entire life. Could be a waste of time, or can be very productive. If we will be able to know that this is the Word of God, and we are going to address the recommendations and the obligations that the Creator of the world gave us, we will be able to earn a lot in this life, or God forbid, to lose a lot. But in order for us to get to that point, first we have to be 100% sure, not 99.9. 99.9, it's very nice. It's almost convincing 100%, but it's almost. And we say that almost does not count. We have to know 100% that this is the Word of God. If we know, it's much easier to practice. If we are not sure 100%, we're always going to have doubts, and it's always going to convince us to stay back and not to do it in the right way, or even not to start. So now, if there is a superpower which called himself God, then obviously we are not expecting him to make any mistakes in the book that he claimed that he gave humanity. In this lecture, I'm going to touch three different topics. First, how do we know for sure that this world has a creator, that really God created the world? That's one question. Question number two, after I'm going to prove that there is a creator to the world, I have to prove that the Torah, what the Christians call the Old Testament, is really the Word of God. After I prove that the Torah is the Word of God, the third subject is, so what's in it for me? How does it apply to me? How is it going to affect my life? Does it matter? Is it enough just to know that there is God and He gave the Jews the Torah and not to be bothered with that, to leave it on a shelf for 7 years? Or once we prove that the Torah is the Word of God, we gotta wake up and see what He wants from us. Now I want to ask a question here. Assuming that we are now an hour ahead, after I already proved my point, you will see in an hour that you're all not going to have any doubts anymore. But after that, the question that I have to each one of you, if I'm going to prove to you tonight without any doubt that the Torah is the Word of God, who wants to tell me what's going to be the required next step after that? Who wants to tell me what's in his mind? If you now going to see in the next hour that for sure, not 99%, for sure this is the Word of God, what will be the next step in your life? Are you going to go back to work tomorrow as usual and go on with your life? Or from now on you're going to invest some more time to see what does He want from you as an individual, as a part of a Jewish nation, or in general as a human being? Is it going to make an impact on the rest of your life? Or are you going to stay in your position, going back to your normal life, and ignore the fact that there is a book that was given to us by the Creator of the world? Who wants to answer this question?
Just answer the question.
This silence concerned me. No, I did not answer. I'm asking a question. The silence, it's not a good sign, Yaakov. You know what it means, right? You know what it means or not? It means that
most people in here believe anyway, they just don't know what the proof is.
The word believing, it's already a very serious problem. Because in science, believing means not knowing. When a scientist say, I believe that an explosion will occur when we touch those two wires together, then we know he's not 100% sure. Can we gamble that it's going to happen? Would you put your money on his belief? No. But when a scientist say, we know for sure that once we touch those two wires, the building will go on fire, we know. The word know or believe is two different things. Jews that say we believe in God, they are the last in the list. Why? Because that means they just informed us that they have doubts if God exists or not. For instance, when someone asks me, you believe in God? I don't say yes. I say I know that God exists. I also know that He runs the show. I also know that you cannot move a finger without His approval. I also know that every leaf that falls from the tree, if it's going to fall left or right, needs His approval on Rosh Hashanah. I also know that if we're going to be healthy for the next year or sick, and we're going to make money or lose money, it needs His approval. If we're going to get married or we'll stay single for the rest of our life, depends on His approval. If we're going to have children, are they going to be healthy? Are we going to succeed in anything we dream about? Needs His approval. Then I also know that not only needs His approval is depend on the way I'm going to behave. If I'm going to behave in a certain way, sooner or later I will see the results of the way I behave. If I'm going to misbehave, sooner or later I'm going to see the results of my misbehaving. All these things by me, it's not believing, it's knowing 100%. Beyond any doubt, not reasonable doubt, beyond any doubt whatsoever. I know. The reason I know is because I learned. I investigated. I challenged this hundreds of times. I checked from all directions, from all angles, again and again and again. And today I don't even have 1% doubt. Not only that, I happened to speak to tens of thousands of people in person and to hundreds of thousands of people through the websites and through my videos. And I don't remember once, and I'm not just bragging, it's a fact, I don't remember once that one person was able to win an argument against me. And the reason for that is, not because I'm somebody bright, it's because I sell the best product in history. I sell the actual words of the Creator of the world. The reason that most people are not aware of it, it's only because they are ignorant in that specific topic. They may be an expert in medicine or computer or in real estate, but they have nothing whatsoever when it comes to the truth of God or the book of God. As a matter of fact, in 14 years that I'm speaking to people, I'm still searching for the first secular Jew that read the entire Torah carefully from the beginning to the end at least once in his life. Not 5 or 50 times. Once in his life to read the book that claimed to be the Word of God. Once in his life, in his lifetime. And I haven't found yet one person that was able to raise his hand and say, I read it carefully and I still decided to live the way I am. So it's such a sad fact here. Most people are wasting most of their life because they are never bother themselves 2-3 days of their life to read the book carefully. Most people, once they're beginning to read the book, it gives them a complete different point of view about life. Even before anybody proved to them scientifically that this is a divine book. Just by reading it, before we even come to conclusion who really wrote it, automatically it makes a huge impact on the life of the people. Why? Because people find it very brilliant. Of course, nevertheless, once you're able to prove without any doubt that this is the Word of God, it's hard for me to believe that a person will ignore it completely. Some people choose to live in a lie. It's a fact. Most people don't want to address the truth or challenge with the truth. But still, even those people who choose to live in a lie, their lie will be a little bit different than before the proofs. Because once the proofs was given, they're going to have new red lines that they're not going to cross anymore. Things that they used to do, they are not going to have the guts to do it ever again. I'm not saying that they're going to be a rabbi or somebody. That's not what I claim. But for sure, it's going to make a very positive impression and impact on their life. Let's move on. The opening statement is, if there is a creator to the world and he claimed that he gave us a book, then if we're going to find one mistake in that book, one geographical mistake, mathematical mistake, or anything like that, we know right away we cannot rely on the rest of the book. Therefore, we're really not obligated to listen to anything over there because we were already able to point that certain things in this book are not correct. For instance, if the book says that the Twin Towers fell in Brooklyn, it's right there. It ended before it even started. Why? God doesn't make such mistakes, right? If the book will say in one page that the father was Abraham and his son was Isaac and his grandson was Jacob, and right after 20 pages it switched the orders of the fathers and the children. All of a sudden Jacob became the father and Abraham became his son, or they have a completely new name over there in two different chapters of the book. Are we going to rely on the rest of the book when we have such contradictions? Of course not. It's an indication that a human being wrote that book, and the book is full of errors. Now, you have to know one thing. Judaism is wider than the oceans. If you take all the water in the world, 72% of the world is water, and you fill it up in a pen, and you would try to write everything that Judaism ever said, it will not have enough ink. That's how wide is our religion. Just to give you an idea, for those who did not know, if you take all the religions in the world together, combine all their books, all of them together, it's not even 1% of the amount of books we have in our tradition, our Torah. We have more than 70,000 series of books, which some of them have 20 or 30 or 11 or 6. So if you multiply it by the number of these books, you're going to have more than 500,000 books to read, which each one of them moves anywhere between 100 to 1,000 pages. And that's just what printed. And a lot of that we lost over the years. Because remember, the Goyim were always after us to destroy everything we had. So they burned many of those books. Just recently, 100 years ago, they found a book from 800 years ago that nobody knew where it is. So just to give you an idea, how wide is the treasure that we got? Of course, we're not going to have time in our life to read even 1% of that, but we don't need to. We have the main book, which is the Torah, the written and the oral Torah. So now, if there is a superpower, we rely on him never to make any mistakes. Step number two, after I said there's more than 80,000 religions and cults, obviously they all claim they have the truth. Do we have time to go and investigate what they have, what they don't have? Obviously not. So what we do is we will speak about the three main religions, or maybe the four ones. Who are they? Judaism, 3,319 years ago. Christianity, just a little bit less than 2,000 years ago. Islam, just a little bit less than 1,400 years ago. Buddhism, 2,400 years old. So all these main religions started way after Judaism was very famous all over the world. Just to give you an idea, I'm going to start speaking about Islam, a few words. How do we know in less than 5 minutes that the Quran is for sure not the word of God? It's very important to know. Because if we prove that the Quran is not the word of God, then everything the Muslims do, it's a waste of time. Everything they claim, it's a lie. Everyone who committed suicide is an idiot. Everything they do, it's really such a waste of their life. Why? Because it's not the word of God. However, if we're not going to be able to find any mistakes in the Quran, still doesn't mean it's the word of God. But at least it still has a status of a book that nobody could deny that has any mistakes. But you'll be very surprised how easy it is to prove that Quran is not the word of God. Mamash, 5 minutes, exactly 5 minutes. You will be amazed. Before I show some quotes from the Quran, I would like to ask you a question. Who knows how the Quran really started?
Muhammad,
but how?
They tried to copy.
Muhammad came approximately 1400 years ago, less, but approximately 1400 years ago. He came from the desert and he claimed that Angel Gabriel gave him the Quran. Question number one that we have to ask, how many witnesses Muhammad brought with him that the Malach, the angel, gave him the Quran? The answer is not even one. Right away, the story of Islam starts with 50% doubt. Why? Nobody ever witnessed that event. Anybody can come and say, God gave me a book in the desert. What's your proof? You have no proof. Second, when we open up the Quran, we're going to find something very interesting. I'll give you an example. It would be very easy for the Muslims to come and claim that Judaism, it was all nonsense. And now, for the first time in history, the real religion is about to start. What is it? Islam. What happened until now? All illusion, nonsense. It would be very easy for them. And then, they start their religion. They don't have to rely on anything. They don't have to prove anything. They start a new religion. The Muslims never did it. The Muslims came and say, there is no doubt the Jews received the Torah in front of millions of witnesses in Mount Sinai. They admit. They admit that Musa, or Moshe, is the greatest prophet ever lived. They admit that God and the Jews spoke in Mount Sinai. They had a dialogue. They admit that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and King David, and Joseph, they're all holy people. In the website of the Hamas, when you go into their background, they write, Abraham, may peace be on him. Jacob, and they write in parentheses, Israel, may peace be on him. Israel, may peace be on him. Then they go to the time of King Solomon and King David, and they bless them every time they mention them. King David was about 3,000 years ago. So they accepted everything in our Torah. It's 100% solid truth. However, they just claim that God chose one more prophet on top of all the prophets that we had already. Muhammad is one of them. And he gave him an extra book. Same thing, he took Jeremiah and gave him a prophecy. Or he took Isaiah and gave him a prophecy. Here comes Muhammad and received the prophecy. That's what got them into a big mess. Why? In order for you to write a phony book, if you know you're a liar, you're not a prophet. So it will be very foolish to write any prophecy, because you know you're not a prophet. You do not know what's going to happen in 200 years from now. You'll be surprised. He wasn't an idiot. He did not write one prophecy in the entire Quran, which surprises very much, because the Muslims are fanatic about the fact that he was a prophet. What are they saying? Prophet Muhammad. Show me one prophecy in the Quran, I'll give you whatever you want. There's none. Not even one. Why? He knew he's not a prophet. Why should he gamble? And 100 years from now, everyone would know he was a liar. Why should he gamble? He did not need to give any prophecy. That's problem number one. Problem number two, when you come to continue from where Judaism ended, you have to be a super, super genius to take such an impossible mission to do. Why? Judaism has 24 books. From the time of Genesis, from the time of Bereshit, until Shir HaShirim, the Songs of Songs, it's a period of about 1,000 years altogether, 24 books full of knowledge. It's very, very long. You have to know all the details, you have to know all the dates, you have to know all the mitzvot, all the orders God gave the Jews until now, and you have to continue from there. Do you know any person that could write a book today as a continuation of 24 books that came prior to that, and is not going to contradict the information that were written 1,000 or 1,500 years before him? Is it possible? Is he going to remember all the details without making any mistake? It's impossible. Take the greatest rabbi ever lived and tell him, here is 24 books, learn it very good and continue from there, add phony parts to the story. But you have to make sure that what you're adding will never contradict the beginning. Why? If it's going to contradict the beginning even by one name, then they'll catch you that you're a liar. And everybody knows that you're not a prophet and you never received this book from God. The one who gave Quran to Muhammad, or if he wrote it himself, it doesn't really matter. Let's see how many mistakes he made. One.
Another question.
Yes.
Another question, is it true that there's, I read the Quran a couple of times, they said something about some things that Muhammad wrote himself, that you talked about Jews are very bad and things,
Not true. He speaks about the Jews very good in the Quran. He married a Jewish woman.
Christians
could be. Yeah.
With Jews, he's saying something good about them. Also, the Rambam also mentioned about he wrote a book on is it in Hebrew also? He has four books.
Hold on one second. Hold on. We'll do it in the right order. Yes, he spoke against the Christians and he spoke very highly about the Jews. He married a Jewish woman. His best friend was a Jew. He was holding his weapon when he went, you know, and he was looking for someone that he can trust. He gave it to a Jew. He said to his students, you can do business with the Jews because they don't take interest and they believe in the same God. And so there's a Quran full of it. Not only that, they never claim that Jerusalem is holy to Quran, to Islam. It's only started in this generation, in the last few generations. So there are many things that today Quran claim that are completely against really what the Quran say. But that's besides the point. We're not here to talk about Islam. I just use it as an example. How easy it's to prove that a book, it's not the word of God. That's all I'm trying to make. For instance, the Quran, this is the sources. You can write it and check if you want to double check me. And you can see right here that there's a dialogue, there's a discussion between Haman and Paro. Haman and Paro are speaking together in the Quran. Every Jew that knows a little bit Torah knows that Haman and Paro lived 1,000 years before Haman was born. So there was no way in history that they could sit together and have any conversation. It gets even worse. When they come to speak about Miriam, the sister of Moshe and Aaron, they confuse her with Miriam, Mary, the mother of Jesse, which lived 1,300 years after Miriam, the sister of Moshe. They mix them. All of a sudden, the Miriam, the sister of Aaron of Moshe, became Miriam, the mother of Jesse. Why? The information that person had were mixed in his mind, and he didn't know history so much. So right away, you see, such a fool, you know, like a first grade level, he wrote that book, and here you go. A billion and a half naive people follow it. Yes?
How do you know which pharaoh he's talking about?
The last pharaoh. I spoke about the last pharaoh. The last pharaoh lived 1,000 years before Haman. One of the first one was even 1,500 years before him. The last pharaoh, after Egypt was destroyed and the Jews came out of Egypt, There was, to be exact, precise, exactly, it's at least 800 years before him. That's enough, right? 800 difference. So here you go. Now, and this is the sources. You can go and check. You can copy it. You can watch it later on in a website and get it from there. I tell you the truth. I'm not such a brave guy. And every time, and about 8 years ago, I made the first Jewish movie for Kiruv. God gave me the opportunity, and it's really not my zchut, because there's a director, a filmmaker, was making movies for Hollywood and for HBO, and I happened to make him religious. It was also in a night like here in Manhattan on the West Side in 8th Avenue. There was a night with lots of people, and he was one of them. And after that night, it bothered him very much, the proofs, and I invited him to come to me for Shabbos. He came to me for Shabbat, and all Shabbat we were arguing and making points. He was trying to prove to himself that what I show, it's not really authentic. That maybe he's going to be able to somehow, you know, go bypass the truth and maybe stay what he is with his American dream. But after the whole Shabbat, he say, if I thought that I'll be able to convince you that it's not the word of God, I have nothing to answer anymore. In a week from now, I'm going back to Israel, and I go to yeshiva. I want to sit and learn serious. So I say, no, relax, not that fast. I got nervous. In a week, you want to leave? He say, yes. If that's the truth, why would I waste more time of my life? He was 36 years old at that time. He say, I'm calling my lawyer tomorrow, my agent. I tell him that the hell with the movie I just made. They made him a party in Hollywood. He even made a film about it. They showed the movie stars clapping to him when he go on the stage. He was an actor also. And he said, I'm calling the agent. I tell him to keep the movie and all the rights to the movie for himself. The hell with the movie, him and the movie. I'm going back to Israel. I don't want to touch this dirty movie. Why? Because this movie had a lot of bad scenes there. So he said, that's it. Then he went to Israel. 6 months later, I went to Israel myself. I gave a lecture in his parents' house. He filmed it in a small camera like this. Another 6 months went by. He sent me a master. I made a movie, the first movie in the Jewish history, to prove people that the Torah is the word of God. When he told me that he wants to make a movie, I laughed at him. I said, what movie? Who's going to watch a movie about lectures? And he said, no, give me all your material from your computer and leave the rest for me. He made such a great movie. Out of nothing. Videos, music, real serious movie. This movie, you know, in the Jewish world, we have only 13.2 million people. That's all. This movie were distributed more than 500,000 copies. You know what a success it is? The greatest singer in the Jewish history didn't sell more than 100,000+ copies. We did more than 500,000. It was translated to English, to Russian, to Spanish. It went to Europe. It went to almost every place in the world. Why? It's a very strong movie. Now, there are parts in that movie, in the original master that he sent me, that I spoke very strongly against Islam. When he sent me the master, I watched it. I said, that's it. My life is over. Soon as this is going to be on the streets of Israel, just imagine one Arab watching it and showing it to the Qadi in the mosque. They won't leave you alone. You know Salman Rushdie. He wrote a bad comment about Islam. Until today, 15 years, he lives in basements. You understand? So I told them, take it off. Someone offered me to go and make a debate with them. I said, listen, up to here. Christians is a different approach. They're open-minded today. Christian used to be much worse than Islam. I don't know if you know that. In the time of the Inquisition, 500 years ago, they were very cruel. And they used to kill and torture people who did not accept their claims. But that's a different story. We just had a debate, I don't know if you heard about it, 3 months ago, approximately, maybe 4 months ago, I had a debate with a Christian professor about Christianity. And then we put it on the website, and there's hundreds of thousands of people watching it, watched it already. And not only that, now I was just informed 10 minutes ago, before I got up here, that they want to do a rematch in front of 1,000 people. They want to make a stadium. They want to bring it up. And you know what's, you're laughing, but you know what's the sad part? That they claim that hundreds from them are ex-Jews, that the missionaries converted to Christianity. They catch every ignorant Jew that they can. They offer them bribe, money, help with the rent, help with food, all kinds of helps that they need. and they get them into their cult. Now, these people anyway had no religion in their life. So what do they care to bow down to their idols or to do whatever they do, as long as they help them? But it's a very sad thing. So the point is, how do we get those Jews out of there? That's the point. All right, let's go back to the subject. So with Islam, you ask, what do they have to say about it? Thank God I don't know yet. By the time they'll answer me, I won't be here. But let's show you a little bit. Here, right here they say, Maria, the daughter of Amram. Maria, the mother of JC, all of a sudden became the sister of Moshe Rabbeinu, the daughter of Amram.
Yeah, but I don't understand, why did they call it, I mean, Mary's name in Hebrew is
Miriam.
Mary.
Miriam.
Yeah, it's Mary.
No, Miriam. Miriam. Mary, it's Miriam. Mary, Maria, Miriam is one name. Mary, Maria, Miriam. Depends, Spanish,
I
English.
I don't understand why in the Quran they would call it Maria. When Maria is like a Latin way of translating the name.
No, we translate it to Hebrew. You understand?
Okay.
Yeah. So they, when they say, well, you have to understand, the Christians took the name Miriam and made it into Maria. You understand? Miriam.
Yeah, yeah.
The Christian has, Joseph became Joseph. Right? Why? Because the Christian decided to change it to Joseph. Yaakov became Jacob. Why? Abraham became Abraham. So the same thing, Miriam became Maria. Same thing. So they take it from there. They continue from there. They just linked her to Amram and Aaron. Let's show you a little bit about Christianity. How did Christianity started? Also with the story of one person. Came Mary and said that she had a dream. God came to her in a dream and told her that she's going to have the Messiah and she's still a virgin. You know the story. How many witnesses she had to her story? Not even one. So the two main religions in the world started with the story of one person without even one witness. When we search and we look into Christianity, we are going to find very interesting things. Right here, I'm going to read it quickly and translate. It says that JC came to his students and told them, don't think that I came to contradict the Torah. I did not come to contradict or to change anything from the Torah. I only came to fulfill. If anybody is going to change one letter from the Torah, even a part of the letter, and will teach others against the Torah, he will be cursed by the kingdom of heaven, by God. Right after that, you see throughout the entire New Testament that he allowed them to do serious violations against the Torah. And one place they ask him, how do we know that you're the Messiah? So he said, because I'm able to make magics. And another place in the New Testament he said, don't believe people that claim they have superpowers because they are able to make magics. They just ask you the other day, how do we know that you're the one? He said, because I'm able to make magics. In another place in the New Testament, he says, don't believe people that claim they have divine power just because they can make magic. Magic is indication of nothing. Many, many, many contradictions. One time he was hungry. He was looking for something to eat. He saw a tree. It's a fig tree. But it wasn't the season. So now the Son of God doesn't know even about the figs. He didn't know the season of the figs. He went all the way to the tree, because somebody asked him, do you think the tree has fruit? He said, let's go closer and we'll see. So if you're the Son of God, you're supposed to know what happened in every given moment all over the world. You don't need to go all the way to the tree and see if the tree has fruit. But you know what's the worst part? When he got to the tree and he saw there's no fruit, he just kicked the tree. It's in the New Testament. And cursed him. May no person ever enjoy a fruit. What is the three sins that he doesn't? It's not the season of the fruit. Why are you cursing him? If you're the Son of God, you're supposed to say, dear tree, in 3 months you're going to have wonderful fruit. Such nonsense over there. But you know what's the best part? Pay attention. How do you know that 2 billion people are wasting their time? And you know what? They are the richest institution. They own half of America. Lands, places, buildings. You have no idea how much money they get. But let's see, what does it mean, mistakes in a divine book? Mistakes. Since the Christians are the best witnesses that Judaism is the word of God, because they call it the Old Testament, and they call theirs the New Testament, and they claim that their religion is a continuation where Judaism just ended, Therefore, it must match. One book has to match the other. Should not be any contradictions. So when we read in our Torah, it's described that Abraham bought the cave of Machpelah in Hebron. Where we brought it from? From Ephron Achiti. He paid him 400 coins and he bought it because he wanted to bury Sarah, as we see in the Torah. Where is the Me'arat HaMachpelah? In Hebron. Where did they bury Jacob? They bury him in Me'arat HaMachpelah in Hebron. Who is the father of Shechem? Shechem, it's Nablus in English. Who is his father in the Torah? Hamor is the father of Shechem. How many Jews went with Jacob to Egypt, his family members, when he went to Egypt for the first time? The Torah says 70. Comes the New Testament and making one mistake after the other. Let's see. Mistake number one, Jacob and his children went to Egypt and died there. And they took them to Nablus, not to Hebron, to Nablus, and they buried them in the grave that Abraham bought from the children of Hamor in Nablus. Who did Abraham bought the cave, as the Torah says, from Ephron? They got confused. The grave of Yosef HaTzadik, it's a different story, was bought from the children of Hamor and is buried in Nablus. They got confused and they wrote that the cave of Abraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov was bought from Nablus and is in Nablus, when every fool in the world always knew that it's in Hebron. Everybody knew where it is. Such an ignorant wrote that book that he did not know where Abraham, Isaac and Jacob are buried. Imagine if you say that the Empire State Building is in Chicago and you expect people to believe you that this is the Word of God. You understand what are we showing here? You have the sources here, Acts 7, you can go and double check. Another mistake, Jacob went to Egypt with 75 people. What happened to God? In the Torah it says 70. 70. All of a sudden, 75. God forgot? He does not remember history? Big problem. And of course, they don't have any answer to it.
Rabbi, is this supposed to be 69? Is it not broken?
No, 70, 70. Yocheved. Okay, now, if you wanted to see what the Torah had to tell us about this, it's very interesting, because in the Torah, 1300 years before Christianity started and 1800 years before Islam started, comes the Torah in Sefer Dvarim chapter 4 and give us a hint, hidden codes, mathematical skip, equal skip inside the text. Let's first read what the text has to tell us. It says, and God will spread us, the Jews, in all the nations, and only very few of them will survive, as God directing you there. And you worship over there a God was made from a man, wood and stone, that can do nothing, these gods, statues, whatever you want to call it. When we read, we're going to take this yud. We count 50 letters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 50 letters, we get to the letter Shin. We count 50 letters, we get to the letter Vav. Yud, Shin, Vav. What's the abbreviation of Yud, Shin, Vav? JC. Yud, Shin, Vav. That's their false Messiah. So when the Torah spoke about phony gods and phony religion, inside the text, the creator of the world plant a equal mathematical skip of 50 that gives us the name of the Messiah of this religion, which is Yud Shin Vav, Yeshu. And also, God, the God of the wood is JC, the God of the stone is Islam. Which stone are we talking about? In Saudi Arabia, in Mecca. They have a huge rock over there. Millions of Arabs go there to prayer in Saudi Arabia. What's the name of the city that's the holiest city to the Islam? Mecca. Mem, 50 letters Chaf, 50 letters He. So, 1300 years before JC was even born, 1800 years before Islam started, when the Torah spoke about two phony religions, a religion of the wood, like the Christians say, knock on wood, and the religion of the stone, which is Islam, it put inside the names Yeshu and Mecca hidden inside the text.
Where do you get this 50 letters all of a sudden that you're counting from?
You see this Yud?
No. I understand.
Yeah.
I see the math.
Right.
Math.
Okay.
Why all of a sudden you picked 50 letters in one
sentence? Did you ever hear about codes in the Torah?
Yes.
Okay. For those who did not hear, in the last 20 years, the world was shocked that for the first time, Professor Ilya Reeves and Dr. Wittstum from the Hebrew University developed a software for computer to search for equal mathematical skip inside the text of the Torah. The greatest mathematician and statistics, you know, people, they checked for 5 years what they came up with, and they admitted in the end. They only checked the book of Genesis, that the book of Genesis was written by superpower. It could not be written by a regular person because they have indications and information that are hidden inside the text in a very clever way, equal mathematical skips. Now, how do you know? You enter a name into the computer. For instance, in the war against Saddam Hussein, first war with George Bush the father, they entered the world Milchemet HaMifratz. Everybody knew that when the war would start, they already gave it a name. How did they call it? The Gulf War. In Hebrew, Milchemet HaMifratz, the Gulf War. So they entered it into the computer. The computer searched in the entire Torah to find that two words, Milchemet HaMifratz, the Gulf War. Now, how does the computer does it? Once you enter an entry to the computer, the first letter is Mem. Every Mem the computer will find in the Torah, it's going to try 2, 2, 2, 2. It didn't find, it goes right back into that Mem and go 3, 3, 3, 3. It did not find, it will go back 4, 4, 4, 4, until thousands. You limit it. It's based on the information that you enter. After it searched all the Mems in the Torah, if it found, it brings it out. If it did not find, it will say no results were found. Now, we are not interested in all these equal skips. We are interested in a minimal skip. Why? Because the larger it is, it's very hard to show it. You need to put on the screen the entire Torah to show the first letter is over there, and the other letter is 20,000 letters later. We are interested that they concentrate together in one page. So we tell the computer, just show me the lowest skip. And you'll be amazed. For instance, in that page that's speaking about the Gulf War, the computer found the name George Bush, Saddam Hussein. It found the word Milchemet HaMifratz. It found so many words that are connected to the war before the war even started. Not only that, Iraq invaded Kuwait, and I think it was February 15 or something like that, if I remember correctly. So America gave them an ultimatum: if you don't leave Kuwait until this date, the war will start. I think they aimed to February 15. So we already knew, you see me now in front of you, I was one of the only people in the world that knew that the war will not start at February 15. It will start on February 18, 3 days later. How did I know? We enter Saddam Hussein to the computer. The computer found it. We enter the name of the war. The computer find it. We enter George Bush. We enter many words that connects to it. When we enter the Hebrew date for February 15, the computer did not find it. We enter the next day in the Hebrew date, the computer did not find it. Only after 3 days that the American gave them the ultimatum, the computer found the date in equal skip. Then we knew that the war would start a few days after, and in exactly the way we thought, that's what happened. So what do you see here? The Torah already predicted the beginning of that war. Now, here it's the same thing. Today, we cannot see it without the help of the computer. Later, if I'm going to have time, I'm going to show you one great piece of information about Rambam, Maimonides, that lives 850 years ago, how the Torah hidden the names that relates to him, the name of his book, certain things that was connected to the Rambam 2400 years before he was even born, which leaves no doubt that this book, it's a divine book. What person can write a book today and inside the book make millions of equal skips, relates to thousands of different events, and 2,000 or 3,000 years before this event are even starting, and he gives you all the information in equal skip. So what do you see right away? That's not a person that was able to write that book. Yeah.
No, but there are many, many people, including religious Jews, who, I'm not saying that they're right, but there are many people that say that the whole Bible code is not correct. They say that the statistics is wrong, it's very biased. There's many Israeli mathematicians out there. There is a man by the name of Barry Simon, I think, in Caltech, who has a beard, a Haredi guy.
Yeah.
I've never checked this computer. How are they wrong when they're saying that this is wrong?
Okay, I don't have now time to make this lecture into that topic of codes. Do you speak Hebrew by any chance?
Yeah.
You understand?
No, I mean, I'm worried that you're gonna...
I have a movie here, which is about half an hour movie, with the one who developed the software, Professor Reeves. He was one of the greatest mathematicians in the world, a communist, anti-religion, hate religious, you know, communist. And also Dr. Wittstum was also anti-religion. You know, we're not suspecting them that they were hidden rabbis. They were two anti-religion people. They were paid to develop the software to find the codes. Through their research and the work of a few years, they became fully religious. Professor Reeves has a long beard, and Dr. Wittstum became a complete Haredi man. I went once to Columbia University. He's a very, very top professor in the whole world. He's a guest speaker in the top universities. They invited him, I think it was 13 years ago, they invited him to Columbia University, and he was looking for kosher food. He's makpit kemach yashan, if you know what it means. It's an old flour that you use, you know, from not before Pesach. It's a special kind of flour, and there was nothing to get in uptown Manhattan. Someone asked me to go deliver it to him. And I give him a call. Where is he exactly? I mean, what do I know about this university? It's all the way there near after Harlem over there. So I told him, why don't you publish it in a way that it's soon somebody will copy it from you and make millions over your invention? You just found it. So he said to me, I wish. I didn't make it for business or for profit. I'm interested that people will find our discoveries. Now, I want to tell you something. Everything you're going to speak, there's always going to be people who criticize. But I'll just give you one example. Just, you know, if we already got into that subject, I'm going to show you one code. You show me one person in the world can contradict that. You don't need more than that. One person in the world that can say that it could be coincidence. Pay attention to this. I'm going to skip about 80 slides forward, and I will show you what I'm talking about. One second. Here you go. This is Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, the greatest posek in the last 1,000 years. He wrote the famous book called Mishneh Torah. He was a doctor. He was a cardiologist, he was an astronomer, he was a mathematician, a philosopher, very, very famous person. In Washington, they have 18 statues of the 18 greatest and smartest people ever live. He's one of them. He wasn't the smartest Jew ever live. They just knew him because he was also a doctor and a scientist. So the Goyim, he was very famous all over the world 850 years ago. He went from Spain to Egypt. He became the personal doctor of the king of Egypt. He lived by the palace all week. Only on Shabbat he had off. And it took him 30 years to write the most famous halacha book in Jewish history. What is it? Mishneh Torah. Right after that, 300 years later, the Shulchan Aruch was written. 90% of it, it's a copy from his book. Okay? Now, what is the main subject in his book? 613 mitzvot that the Jew has to keep. He went one by one in the right order, and explain each one of them for men, for ladies, when, what time, how. He went one by one. Now pay attention how the Torah gave us information about his life 2400 years before he was born, and you tell me who is the fool that will come and try to contradict that this is divine. You tell me in 2 minutes. First, we have my battery are dying here, so where is Rama? You have any batteries like this, one or two? Regular batteries, if you have. Okay, so now, here, we start, just when I need it, it doesn't work, but just until it brings battery, we're starting from this mem. Now, before we're starting with this mem, I'm going to tell you what this, the subject of this chapter. This chapter speaking about God telling Moshe to go to Pharaoh and tell him to release the Jews out of Egypt. And Moshe comes and say to God, they're not going to believe me, he's not going to listen to me. And God told him, don't worry, it's a part of my plan. I'm going to make sure that it's going to be difficult. Why? Because I want to strike the nation of Egypt so bad, and I want everybody to see what I'm going to do to them. So don't be too impressed by him. He's not going to listen to you because I'm heart in his heart. So now, we have the word Moshe. What was his name? Moshe ben Maimon. Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. Yeah, thank you very much. One or two. One should do it, but you know, just in case, give me the two. There you go. Take those two. Thank you. Okay, so now, we have the name Moshe. Where did Moshe ben Maimon live? He lived in Egypt. So we have the word Mitzrayim. What's his abbreviation of the name? Resh Mem Bet Mem, Rambam. Resh Mem Bet Mem. The only time in the entire Torah that you have four words back to back in the right order, Resh Mem Bet Mem, it's only here. No other place. Resh Mem Bet Mem, that's the only place in the entire Torah. And what's the subject of those words? Rebot Moftai Be'eretz Mitzrayim. I'm gonna publish my miracles in the nation of Egypt. And that's what the Rambam did. In Egypt, everybody knew it's a genius that came to Egypt. So that's it. What was his job? He was the heart doctor of the king of Egypt. What do you have in this page? Lev Paro, the heart of Pharaoh. This is all hints. That's not a scientific proof. It couldn't be by coincidence so far. From now on, it's no coincidence. Pay attention. What's the name of the book that he wrote? Mishneh Torah. If you take this mem, count 50 letters, you get Shin. You count 50 letters, you get Nun. You count 50 letters, you get Hey. So you have Mishneh. You take this stuff, you count 50 letters, you get Vav. You count 50 letters, you get Resh. You count 50 letters, you get Hey. What did you get? Torah in equal skip of 50. We have one thing to clarify. Why, from the word Mishneh to the word Torah, we have such a long space? It should have been Mem, Shin, Nun, Hey, 50 letters, Taf, and it's one name, it's one entry. Why all of a sudden, from Mishneh to Torah, we have such a long distance? Very good. You're clever. You're catching quick. Hold on. Hold on. One more second. Now, what's the subject of the book? 613 mitzvot. What's the distance between the word Mishneh to the word Torah? 613 letters. Now, let's conclude. 2400 years before there was in existence anyone by name Rambam, he was not even born, 2400 years before, a book was given to the Jews in front of 15 million witnesses. When the book opened, when the Jews opened the book, they just read what happened a year ago in Egypt, that Moshe went to Pharaoh and Pharaoh did not want to release the Jews. They did not dream that inside that text, they have information about somebody that will be born 2400 years from now. We, with the help of the computer, we know what they didn't know. What they didn't know? The Torah told us there will be a person named Moshe. He would live in Egypt. He will be the hard doctor of the king of Egypt. His nickname will be Rambam. Resh Mem Bet Mem, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. Will make magics all over Egypt. He will write a book that called Mishneh Torah that will speak about 613 mitzvot. What's the chances statistically that something like this will be by coincidence in a book? Now, you still insist. The next time when someone goes into arguments with you about the code, you're not going to need to bring your laptop out. You'll be able to do it manually with him. What is it? I'll give you an example. For those of you who ever went and made Kiddush, when we say in a Kiddush on Friday night, Yom HaShishi, Vayichulu HaShamayim VeHaaretz, that's a part of the Kiddush, it's a part from the Torah. Here is Yom HaShishi. If we take this Yud of the Shishi, you count 7 letters, you get Shin. You count 7 letters, you get Resh. 7 letters, you get Aleph. 7 letters, you get Lamed. What do you get? Yisrael in equal skip of 7. Why 7? Because the subject is 7, Shabbat, the 7th day. Why Israel is this word? Why? First of all, it means Yashar El. It's honest with God. Straight with God. It starts with the smallest letter, the life of the Jew in this life, in this world. Anyway, this world is only temporary. It's a test, preparation for the real world. The Jew starts small and ended big. That's the biggest letter in the alphabet. Those 5 letters, it's a combination of the 3 fathers and the 4 mothers. Yud, Yaakov and Yitzchak. Shin, Sarah. Resh, Rachel and Rivka. Aleph, Avraham, Lamed, Leah. The 3 fathers and the 4 mothers are giving us the word Israel. Israel. But if you're still not convinced, you still don't need a computer, open the Torah in the first page. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. From the taf of Bereshit, you circle the taf, you count with your fingers in the Chumash 50 letters. Here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, until you get to the letter Vav. The 50th letter will be Vav. You count 50 letters, the 50th letter will be Resh. You count 50 letters, the 50th letter will be A. Just in the beginning of the Torah, it's described to you the creation of the world. There is hidden codes of the word Torah. The beginning of Torah, right away, the Torah are in equal skip. Taf, Vav, Resh, A, in equal skip. Is it coincidence? I'm not so sure. Why? Because when you go to the book of Exodus, Sefer Shemot, the same thing repeats. Ve'ele Shemot, Bnei Israel, that came to Egypt. Those are the names of the Israelites that came to Egypt. And you take this taf, you circle it, you count 50 letters, you get Vav. 50 letters, you get Resh. 50 letters, you get hey. What did you get again in equal skip? Torah. Coincidence? Cannot be. If you're still not convinced, then you go to Sefer Vayikra, the 3rd book. What do you see in Vayikra? Let's skip that. To make long story short, this is what you get. You get a special menorah that indicates that not only that there's no human being that could write such a book, some people thought there are few people. Whenever one finished, came another one and continued it. It's impossible because he needed to know all the hidden codes because he would not know how to plan it. He doesn't know the secret of the first one. That's proof to you that there's only one writer to the book, not two. But the best part is that when you go to Bereshit, you get Torah in equal skip of 50. Shemot, also the same thing. Vayikra, you don't get Torah. What do you get? The name of God, Yud. 50 letters A, 50 letters Vav, 50 letters He. Why this is the name of God, Yud, He, Vav, and He? Because God told us in the Torah that is not material. Therefore, He does not have any limitation and He does not depend on time. Everything materialistic, it depends on time. Whenever you have material, you have time. That's what Albert Einstein wrote, even though the Ramban did it 700 years before him. But still, let's give him the credit for now.
So what? So
wait, patience. So now, so the name of God is Haya, Hey Yud, Hey, it's the past. Hove, Hey Vav, and Hey, it's Hove, the present. And Iye, the future, because it does not depend on time. So we have Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey in equal skip of 50 in Sefer Vayikra. Then you go Bamidbar and Dvarim, you have again Torah in equal skip of 50. But this time from left to right, in reverse. So you have Taf, Vav, Resh, Hey, Taf, Vav, Resh, Hey. So now what do you see? You see that the center of the world is God. That's from five books, the center is the third one. The two from the right goes from right to left towards the center. And the two from the left go from left to right towards the center. It's all planned in equal skip. Now, if you know, if I'm going to ask you to write tomorrow an article about what happened to you all day today, from the moment you open your eyes until the end of this lecture tonight, you have to write every word you said, what did you do, who did you meet, what did you eat, and so forth and so on. And in that story, which will be, let's say, 5 pages, I'm going to ask you to hide 10 different names of 10 different people in equal skip without interfering with the actual story that happened to you today. You're going to need 1 million years to do it. You understand why or no?
What do you mean by I need 1 million years? You're going to get it or you're dead. You have one story. What does that mean?
No. If you write, first you have to write the truth. You have to write what happened to you from the morning to the beginning, to the end, in a chronological order, with all the things that happened. Inside, you have to plan that, for instance, you want to write the name Alexander Leibovich, whatever. Let's say you want to hide that name. You have to plan that Alexander Leibovich will be in equal skip of 50, and you're going to have to move words around. Because when you're going to get the Aleph, what's the next word? Lamed. But the 50th letter in your case, it's not Lamed, because you wrote the truth. So now you have to move words around. So you have to switch the word. So if you switch this word, the next letter is not going to be right. I'll give you 5 million years. And that's only 10 names. You know how many codes the Torah have? Thousands that I know. Who is the one who will manipulate and claim that the codes is not reliable? Especially when we have a letter that the scientists wrote. We checked for a few years the book of Genesis, and we have no doubt that this book is a divine book. Not only that, they wrote an additional part to the research. You know what they wrote? Which God, the God of Judaism, or the God of the Quran, it's not our job to decide. They wrote another nonsense thing. But for sure, it was a superpower that was written by God. And this is all science, it's not religious scientists. So now you have to know, it's not only reliable, there is no way to contradict it. You know, when Albert Einstein came, 7 years that all the scientists in the world were denying what he found. Impossible, impossible, day after day, night after night, for 7 years. When they check everything he wrote, they come to the same results. But for 7 years, they denying it. You know why? It's something in psychology, it's called cognitive dissonance. The brain and the heart do not work in the same speed. What the brain sometimes catch in 5 minutes, the heart can catch in 5 years.
Well, there was other problems as well, because the Nazis didn't want it to... It was a different historical thing. But my question to you is now a different one.
Okay.
Let's say if we go back 200 years, before there was a computer, and someone would come up to you and say, "Prove God to me."
I would not be able to do it through codes
okay.
at that time, but I have hundreds of other proofs. Who's to say that I have to do it through codes? Let's go back to where I was, and you see how I would do it 500 years ago. Let's go back in history 500 years, and I'll show you how I was able to prove in my previous reincarnation, how I used to prove to people. By the way, I want to tell you something about me. Don't think I'm crazy. Maybe we should erase it from the video. About 8 years ago, I went to an autistic kid. Autist, it's not a regular person. He has no free choice. The brain is disconnected from the body. And they have abilities that all of us together cannot do. For instance, you're speaking to him, you're really speaking to his soul. You're not really speaking to his intelligence because he's disconnected from this world. So now you bring his finger to the computer, and he doesn't even look at the computer. He looks in the air. He makes all kinds of faces. He's crying. He's this. At the same time, he's typing like this with his finger, sentences on the computer, and he speaks to you. He doesn't even look at you. Whatever, he can do two things at the same time. He eats eggplant, he looks at the newspaper, he laughs, he screams, he gets up. His sister are pushing him down because he doesn't want to sit on a chair. He gets up, he makes all kinds, and at the same time, his hand moving like this. And sometimes, if you move the buttons, his finger continue to go like this. Unbelievable. You know what? I asked him questions about myself. Because as you go into the room, he knows who you are right away. Sometimes he begins to type before you even ask a question. I brought a friend of mine in before he walked into the room. Before we even went in, there's a little hallway, he started to type. Why are you embarrassed to look like a Jew? Aren't you embarrassed of yourself? So my friend came and sat down. He said, why do you care about the outside? Care about the inside. So he typed, the outside changed the inside. You got to start with the outside. Then I brought my mother-in-law. She wanted to ask about somebody. He told her, do not dwell about this person. Nobody will take you out of your situation right now. Only one can do it, which is God. Stop counting on human being to save you. He doesn't even know who she is. Then he told me, I want to speak to your wife. He tells me, she has a question in her heart that nobody can answer to her. It's important you bring her because I want to tell her the answer to her question. I got very nervous, you know. A week after I brought my wife there. Before she even went in, I'm outside. She went into the house, right away say, hello, Mrs. Mizrahi. It's an honor for me to have you in my house. You are a descendant from a very holy person in the past. And I wanted your husband to bring you here. He doesn't even look, he types. I wanted your husband to bring you over here because I know the question that bothers you very much. What's the question? You think that in the world to come, your husband will get all the reward for making all these Jews closer to God, and you're a regular housewife. You're all the time in the house with the children, and you're going to get nothing. So I wanted to assure you that you and your husband are partners 100% in everything. And God puts you here. You know how they call America? He puts you here in Egypt. And this is his sentence. I get chills when I remember that moment. To save as many Jews as possible from eternal spiritual death. That's his words. Then when I went in, I asked him a question. Why God chose me? After all, there's billions of people out there. There's millions of Jews. So he started to tell me that in my... Maybe I should not say it to the camera, but I just give you a hint. He told me who was I in my previous life and what I used to do. And I used to do in my previous life the opposite of what I'm doing today. So he gave me an opportunity to correct. It's all measure for measure. I was helping the Zionist communists to convince Jews to go out of the yeshivot into girls and boys schools that they opened in Iraq. They opened a school in Iraq 100 years ago, and I came as one of their movements, you know, as a part. Come, it's time to go to Israel. We opened up a school over here. You understand? So it's all, everything we do in this life, we have an opportunity to correct what we spoiled in our previous life. But now, let's see what I was proving 500 years ago. That's before that. So I show you this. Pay attention to this. Here. Just to conclude the point of the religions. The point of the religions is like this. Nobody ever had a witness that they received any book from God. They were unable to bring one person. The Torah actually predicted it. For those who came to the lecture in Great Neck, I show that slide. I'm going to show it again briefly. Then I'm going to show some things that I did not show over there. The Torah says, go check in history. Did ever a group of non-Jews claim that I gave them a book or I spoke to them from the fire as I spoke to you, the Jews? That means it's a promise here from the creator of the world, the writer of the Torah, 3,319 years ago, that if there will be a group of Gentiles that comes and claims that they had God speaking to them in a mountain or in the desert, even though we know for sure they're lying, we know. Even if we can prove they're lying, we're going to have the first mistake in Judaism. Why? Because the Torah took a huge risk. The Torah says, it will never happen that a group of non-Jews will come and claim that I spoke to them. It will never happen. Now remember, 80,000 times one individual came and made up a new phony religion. Is it possible to think that not even one of them thought to bring 2-3 witnesses with him? To bribe them? To say that Muhammad could bring 5-6 cousins of him, give them $1,000 each, to come and swear that they saw the angel come down and hand the Quran to Muhammad? You know what we have, the Jews? We had a tragedy if it would happen. Why? Because the Torah promised it will never happen. No group of Goyim will ever claim that I spoke to them. What person can take such a risk? Who's going to write in a book? Check in the entire history. Did ever somebody come and claim that God spoke to them, a group of people? One? Yes. 80,000 times. 2, 5, 10? Never. I will prevent it. I will never allow a group of Goyim to come and lie and claim that I spoke to them from the fire. Why? I don't want to confuse you, because it's a few witnesses. The Torah says 2 witnesses is enough. They come and say the same story. You have to take their words as a truth. I will prevent it. One, let them come as much as they want. Who cares? One, it's nothing. One witness in court is nothing in a court of Torah. You saw all the entire incident, how the person killed another, with what gun, where was it, what time, everything you described. You're only one witness, they cannot touch him. Tomorrow another witness show up and he tells the same story after an investigation. 2 witnesses, the murderer will be executed based on the words of 2 people, 2 kosher people. You understand? So what do you see? God did not want to make it harder for us. He never allowed those phony prophets to bring witnesses to their story. Never. Why? We would have a serious dilemma. 20 Arabs comes and they swear they saw Muhammad speaking to Angel Gabriel.
No, sorry. When you say witnesses, witnesses being the specific story, I'm sorry, the text in there said that God is going to speak from the fire.
No, that God will speak to a group of non-Jews in any way. Read, you understand here, I'm going to read to you. Did ever a group of people ever heard the voice of God speaking from the fire as you heard and survived? Or God ever tried to take a group from a larger group with magics and war and a strong arm and all kinds of things as God did to you in front of your eyes in Egypt? So there's many, many ways. There will be no way that God will come and speak to a group of Goyim. I would like to skip some and go into another proof. This one I showed, maybe I'll go back to it later.
With the Rambam and the Rabban Nachman, they had some in common.
They lived about 60, 70 years apart. So Ramban was before the Ramban. Okay, now, up to 500 years ago, everybody was arguing if the world is round or flat. Until Christopher Columbus went on his trip and he arrived to the same place. And then they finally understood that the world is round. But in the prophet Yeshaya, 2600 years ago, even though he wasn't a scientist, he wasn't working for NASA, and he wrote clearly, Ayoshev al chug ha'aretz ve'yoshvei ha'kachagavim. Rashi 900 years ago in France, Rashi say chug, lashon mechoga, ogel. It's round, the world is round. So this is 2100 years before Columbus. It's a sentence in the Tanakh that the world is round. Why do you need to argue? Why you need to check and make researches and try and make arguments? The book of God already told you, the world is round. So this is just to give you information that no human being could give such information 2600 years ago. I'll give you another example. If you go to college, they tell you that the first one who invented the telescope is Galileo Galilei, or Hubble, one of them. The Hubble was 30 years before Galileo. He died and Galileo continued where he stopped, and now you have a telescope. But the Torah said that Rabban Gamliel had a tube that he was looking into it. He was able to see the people from 2,000 amah on the land and 2,000 amah in the ocean, together 4,000. 4,000 amah, it's 2 kilometers, almost 2 kilometers, which is about 30 to 40 blocks in Manhattan. So that means if we are here on 2nd Avenue and 53rd Street, he had a tube that he was looking and he saw people in 23rd Street or maybe 14th Street. What is it if not a telescope? What is it? Well, how would you call such a tube? That's 2,100 years ago. Rabban Gamliel. He was the president of Israel. So he had a tube. Here's the Gemara. You have the source right here. Masechet Eruvim, page 43. He was able to see people from far away. So whatever they teach you in college, that's because they don't know the Babylonian Talmud so well. Now, let's give another proof. This is a proof that I did not show in a previous lecture. As you can see, this is the sun, and this is the earth, the red one, and the white one is the moon. This is how it's working. The sun is in the center. The earth, every year, the earth is finishing a complete circle around the sun.
What is the green thing there? I mean,
the green, right now, the green is Israel. Right now, see, now it's America, the dark. That's why they put a green point that you can see where is Israel, where is America. When here it's dark, in Israel it's light. So now, the earth is turning around itself every 24 hours. It finishes a full circle. As it's turning around itself, it goes and finishes a whole year, 365 days, finishing the entire circle around the sun. Why do we need to know that now? Here we have a book that was written 2,000 years ago, and of course it's based on what we receive in Mount Sinai in the Torah. In the Torah, that's what called Kabbalah, Jewish mystical parts of the mystical parts of Judaism. We have 6 discoveries that shocked the world, and that's 1,500 years before the non-Jewish scientists discovered it. Until this moment, they got the credit for their discoveries, even though it was written black on white in the Torah, in Judaism, in the Zohar. Zohar was written 2,000 years ago in Israel by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And let's see what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai knew already 2,000 years ago. First, the whole world is turning around like a ball. Not only is round, it's turning around itself. 2 major discoveries in 1 sentence. Then, there are people on the bottom of the ball, there are people on top. Right there, it's gravity. There are people in the bottom and they're not falling to space. There are people upside down. As a matter of fact, this building, if you go on a satellite outside of Earth, and you'll be able to see Manhattan, you may see Manhattan, the entire Manhattan is in the bottom of the ball. We could be upside down. We all the opposite. Right? The head is down, the buildings are down, the roof, the helicopters are flying upside down. Everything.
What is Yeshuva? Yeshuva.
It's Aramaic. You know Aramaic? The Zohar was written in Aramaic. This is the Hebrew, this is the Aramaic. Yeshuva, it's Yeshuv.
It's a settlement.
Yeshuv, it's a place that people sit there, live there. It could be a small settlement, it could be the entire world. Is turning around like a ball. There are people on the bottom and there are people on the top of the ball. Now, and the people who live in different parts of the ball, there are differences in their image and the color of their skin based on the weather and the air that they breathe in each place where they live. In the beginning of the previous century, about 100 years ago, the scientists found that the genes of every person is influenced by the air that he breathes. That's why in Africa, everyone is black. In Scandinavia, everyone is blonde with blue eyes. In China, you have 2 million copies from 7-Eleven, all yellow skin, straight hair, black. You never find Chinese with curly blonde hair and blue eyes. You never find. They all copy. Africa, all copy. Jews, however, look like all of them. We have Jews, black, blonde, these Italians. Jews are like everyone. Why is it? Because the Jews as a part of their punishment for rebelling against God, they were spread in all the nations as the prophecy which I just read to you before, 10 minutes ago. I will spread you in all the nations, and only very few of you will survive. We started in the same generation like the Chinese. 4,200 years ago, we, the Jews, and the Chinese just started our nation. We have 13.2 million, they have close to 2 billion. And they have birth, on, they have restriction on birth. They cannot have more than one kid. Jews don't have any restrictions. If they are almost 2 billion, we should have been 10 billion. How is it possible that instead of 2 billion, we became only 13.2 million Jews all over the world? We are the smallest nation in the world, but we are the nation that every news, in every language, every day you hear something about us. In the economy, in the Middle East, and everything, you always hear about Jews, Prize Nobel, I'm a winner, and all. Jews contributed to humanity more than all the other nations together. I'll give you an example. In America alone, you take the entire amount of doctors. Half of them, 50% of the doctors in America are Jewish. 50% are not Jewish. The difference is that if you share America to two groups, the groups of the Jews is 6 million. The groups of the non-Jews is 300 million. 300 million gave the same amount of doctors like the 6 million. It makes sense? That, why? Because the Torah promised it. The Torah promised that the Jews will be the most successful people on earth always. And everybody will speak about us. Where does it say it in the Torah? Ve'ahita shama lemashal uleshnina. You're going to become the highlight. Everywhere I'm going to send you. Why? Because the whole world was created for you. I created the whole world for the nation of Israel, for my children. Everything here, every things that I operate, everything that I do here, the main thing, the purpose of this creation is the nation of Israel. If the nation of Israel will be destroyed, then you know a minute before that there is not going to be any earth. Because God does not need this place unless if his nation will be here. That's why he promised in the Torah, I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that I will never replace their descendants with any other nation. Even though they're going to get punished from the way they behave, and only very few of them will survive, you know for sure that the same way I am God will never be different, the nation of Israel will never be destroyed. It's a prophecy, clear prophecy. The whole world is for my nation Israel. Now, the Zohar continue and say, there's a place in the world that once it's darkness to those, it's a day for the others. So now he knew how the earth is facing the sun. In one side is day, the other side is night. And then there's a place in the world that you cannot find their night only in a very limited time. In the North Pole, you have 6 months light, 6 months dark. But even in the 24 hours that you have in a day, it's all light. What do you find over there? That there is a very short period of time, something like an hour, that it becomes dark for about an hour, oh, and right away it becomes sunny again. It's interesting. How did he know? He never went to the North Pole. You know how? How do I know? The first time in history that a person stepped in the North Pole was 1908, exactly 100 years ago. So in the time of the Zohar, nobody knew even that there's a place over there because nobody went there. The world was different than today. No airplanes, you know, it was only maybe some boats and that's it. Let's give you another example. This is what I meant before, as you can see. Look at their faces. They all look the same. All twins. You have about 20 twins here. And look at the Jews. One different than the other. It could be her brother, maybe. It's good to laugh a little bit.
Do you think a Sephardi and an Ashkenazi are look the same?
Well, you have Syrians that look Ashkenazi.
A Yemeni look like an Arab, so.
I know one Yemenite with green eyes. All right, now. The nation of Israel came and complained to God after the destruction of the second temple. How did you forget about us? How you neglected us? came God and answered the Knesset of Israel, not the Israeli Knesset members today. For sure God would not speak to them. We're talking 2400 years ago, 2300 years ago. Came God and told the nation of Israel a story. What's the story? Before I'm reading you the story, I would like to give you some information about science. I'm sure most of you know that until 400 years ago, the time of Galileo Galilei with his telescope, the whole world knew that there is only 6,000 stars in the universe. They stood on mountains and they were counting the stars and they came to approximately 6,000 stars. When Galileo took his 6-foot telescope and raised it up, he saw so many more galaxies that we couldn't see without the telescope. And he came and said, wow, it's a dream. We were dreaming. There's so many more stars. Just couldn't see them. What did the Christian church do to him? He got on their nerve and they choked him to death with dust. They put him in a house. They took shovels. They threw sands. He couldn't breathe. And they killed him. Everybody that did something the church didn't like were disappearing. So now, God came to the nation of Israel, and this is in Masechet Brachot, page 32. You can go check it. They have an article in English. You can read over there. And this is what it says. And God came to the Knesset Israel, to the Jewish nation, and answered, my daughter, 12 sections I created in heaven. In each section I created 30 armies. In each army I created 30 legions. In each legion I created 30 raton. In each raton I created 30 karaton. In each karaton I created 30 gistera. In each gistera I hung 365,000 multiplied by 10,000 stars. And all of that I created for you. For who? For Israel. And you have the nerve to say that I left you and forgot about you. Beautiful story. Let's calculate what God was telling us. 12 section, that's the horoscope. Aries, twins, all the signs. You know how it works. You have, the earth goes around the sun. It's 1 year. 1 year circle. A circle in geometry, 360 degrees. 360. If you take a circle... like a pizza, you slice it to 12 equal slices. How many degrees each slice will be? 30. So now, if you were born when the earth was in the slice between 12 and 1, look at the, imagine a round clock now, between 12 and 1, that's when the earth was in the circle. Then you are this particular sign, like Aries, right? If it went between 1 and 2, it's another 30 degrees. Now what are you? An ox. What do you say? Shor, Mazal Shor.
Taurus.
Taurus. So you're Taurus. This is what it means, signs, right? So 12, now you understand the source, where it came from. 12, in each one of them I created 30 mini sections. He gave them names. And 30, and 30, 30, 30, 365,000. Another 40 for the ribo, 10,000. It gives us 10 to the power of 19 stars. This was written approximately 2,000 years ago in the Babylonian Talmud. But it was received 3,319 years ago. It was received by the Jews from the actual creator of the world. Now, do you know any person, give him all the technology you want, 2,000, 3,000 years ago, that I was able to give you a number like we are talking about, when up to 400 years ago, the maximum they could count was 6,000. What person 2,000 years ago would write such nonsense based on what? People would say it's crazy. Where are you bringing these numbers from? Look, 6,000 stars, that's what we see. Where did you bring us such a number? 12 times 30 times 30. Let's see what the scientist has to say today. In 1990, Dr. T. Bruhers from Queen Mary College in London had a research with mega computer and he found there's 10 to the power of 19 stars in universe. This is a goy, a scientist in London. The interesting part is I find it very interesting that what the Torah used seven different names. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I created 12 sections, and each one 30 armies, 30 legions, Raton, Karaton, Gistera, and stars. The scientist, without knowing about the oral Torah, about the Gemara, without knowing about all these names that appear in Judaism, based on their own researches and all the pictures that the satellites took of all the galaxies and what the mega computer was counting, a mega computer could be the size of a building. It's not a little laptop here. So they took, the computer counted all the dots that the pictures of the satellites were taking and came out to this such huge number, 1 and 18 dots after the 1. So it's an 18 digits after the 1. It's a very long number, like quarter trillion or something. I don't even know how to say it. But the interesting part is that they also have 7 sections, but they call it in different mother name. What we call mazalot, they call galactic cell. What we call chayil, an army, they call local groups of galaxies. What we call legion, the Torah, they call galaxies. What we call raton, they call galactic area. What we call karaton, they call groups of galaxies. What we call gistera, they call globular groups of stars. What we call stars, they call also stars. At least one thing we have in mutual, yes.
When you came out with your cheshbon before of 30 times 30 times, how did that refer to the text in Hebrew?
12 sections I created.
Okay.
And in each one of them I created 30 armies. So right there you have 12 times 30.
Well, how did you get 30 armies?
That's what the Gemara says. I created 30 in each one of the 12. Yeah. You have 12 slices, right? Yeah. In a round circle.
Like Rahaton and all these words it uses, is that what you're getting it from?
Yeah.
Just go back to the pictures.
Yeah,
pictures.
Yeah. Here you go. 12 sections, like I told you, okay? Each one of them I created 30 army. In each one army, it's like a mini section. You got it? In each one of the mini one, I created a mini, mini one. And in the end, in the little parts, which is in a larger part, which is in a larger part, I hung 365,000, add 4 zeros to it, multiply by 30, 30, 30, 30, and 12, it gives us 10 to the power of 19. We don't really care about the number, really. That's not the point here. Don't get me wrong. I'm not coming to argue if the world have 10 to the power of 19 or 10 to the power of 20. That's not the issue here. The issue here is, what Jew or what person 2,000 years ago would write in a book, I created such and such sections and this and this and this. Everybody will say, hey, you're a fool. Let's take him to mental house because we only see 6,000 stars. This guy is a dreamer. Who would write such a thing? And he speaks, I created. And in the end, you know what? You know what's the sad part here, which we almost did not pay attention to? I created that for Israel. For you. And you have the nerve to say that I left you and forgot about you. Now I want to ask you, between me and you, who needs all these stars and galaxies? We can't even buy real estate over there. Nothing. You know, some Israelis, they buy on the internet space on the moon. We found a way to make money. But between me and you, as two intelligent people, who cares about all these stars? What benefit you or I or any Jew got from all this? So the answer is, one sentence in a divine book. This is what it says in Hebrew, and I'll translate to English. S'u marom enechem, uru mi bara ele. Lift your eyes to heaven and pay attention. Who is the creator of this huge army of stars? What for? You should be impressed by my power. And then, once I'm going to be impressed by your power, then what? You're going to read the next sentence. I chose you, you, Yosef, Yitzchak, Miriam, Sarah, Rachel, to be my children, to belong to my family, not to be like Chris and Muhammad. You understand? Supposed to faint from happiness. A Jew should run in the street screaming, I am the son of God, not J.C. Penney. I am the real son of God. And what does the Jew does? What does he do? He makes sideburns like Elvis. Or he wants to be like Bruce Springsteen, go to the bars. Oh, I'm a goy. My name was Yosef, I became Joey. Right? Oh, Matityahu became Matthew. I don't have to tell you what the Jews call themselves. Why? They're embarrassed to show they're Jews. Even those who are religious, sometimes they put a baseball cap. Why? I know I'm a Jew, Rabbi. It's not, I don't belong here. But the truth is...
I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay, as you said, we are 13.2 million Jews
right.
on planet Earth, among 4 billion...
6.4 billion.
Okay. So if God created everything for the Jews and we are children of... So what about the rest of people? Like, they are human beings.
Oh.
And, you know, in a way, we live off of them too. Like, right. Jews bring a lot of good to the world, but at the same time, they bring a lot of good to us too.
No problem. And also, so they bring a lot of bad to us.
Beings,
but you know, they also...
But we bring a lot of bad to them too.
Okay, first of all, what's your name?
Monica.
I want to tell you something. Don't try, or I don't know, I mean, I hope nobody here understood that by showing this, I indicated that the goyim are worthless. That's not what I said. The opposite. The Torah said to respect them, not to steal from them, to respect each one of them, not to start a war with them.
But you know, we are human beings.
Right.
They are human beings.
Okay, but there's only one
and
difference.
God is not only for us. If there is a God, then there is.
Yeah. There is a big difference.
What's the difference?
The difference is like this. If there was no divine book in the world, no divine book, everybody has his own opinion. Mm-hmm. And I would come and stand in front of a large crowd like here tonight and say, we are superior. We better. They nothing. They're garbage, they're second or third class citizen, then I'm no different than Adolf Hitler. What's the difference?
But you know a lot
wait.
Of sound like
there's that. One thing to say that they are nothing. There's one thing to say that we have to exterminate them and to kill them. That's the one thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously nobody say that, because the Torah say you should not kill means anybody, not only not Jews. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not what we're speaking about. But even if I came and I say that we are better than them, then I'm a prejudiced racist. Okay. However, think, use your common sense. If me and the Muslim and the Christian, we are right there more than two-thirds of the world, opening the Torah in Arabic, in Farsi, in English, it doesn't matter, it's the same words. And we all three of us read, they admit that this is the word of God. And what do we read? Pay attention. I'm going to tell you word by word what the Torah says. And after that, you will never have any questions ever about this, because we are not capable of making decision what person is better than others. But God made an order. There is a value to each person on earth which is different than the other. The only one who is allowed to take people and put them in certain groups and rate them and say, you are better than him, and he is better than him, and he is better than him. The only one can do it is the creator of the world. No human being can say, I'm better than you because I'm white and you black, or because I'm yellow and you red, or whatever, right? That's obviously not the point here. Nobody here come and say, we are prettier than the non-Jews. We are smarter, we are richer. That's not the issue here. They can be better manners than us. They can have more money, they can be wiser, they can be smarter, they can have better personality than us. There's only one problem. Depend. It's a problem or not a problem, depend how you want to call it. There's only one difference. What's the difference? In a divine book that we all agree, me, Muhammad, and Chris, agree that it's the word of God, they fell into a big trap by admitting that the Torah is the word of God. They just had no choice. They could not deny 1,300 years of history. The whole world knew the Jews received the Torah in front of 15 million witnesses. Nobody can bury that under the rug. It says, I chose you, the Jews, to be my children. I love you more than all the other nations. I don't want you to imitate the rest of the Gentiles. Don't marry them. Don't behave like them. Don't dress like them. Don't eat their food. Once you're going to get married to them, you're going to cut yourself out of my nation. You become like them. I'm sick and tired of them. They did so much bad in front of me that I got disgusted and fed up for what they did. Now in Hebrew. Et kol ha-to'avot ha-ele asu ha-goim ha-ele ve'akutz bam. I got sick and tired of them. Be careful not to be like them. Don't dare to marry them. That's a warning in the Torah. Then in another place in the Torah. I chose you from all the nations to be my children. If you are going to listen to me and follow my orders and follow my ways, I'm going to make you a special nation. Am Sgula. Sgula in Hebrew means Mesugal. Mesugal means have extra ability, more than any other nation spiritually. You know, we have more ability than them. Not that they don't count, don't get me wrong. They also have 7 laws to keep. They also have world to come. And I have even better news for you. Muhammad or Said in Iran that keep 7 laws in the Torah that is obligated to keep is better than a Jew that does not follow the Torah in the eyes of God. For sure. No racism, no discrimination. If a Jew is a sinner, he goes down to the end of the list. Where does it say it? Maybe I'm an extremist, I'm making it up. No, I only speak with proofs. That's why I'm always very careful to have everything that I say in front of you. You have doubts? No problem. You're not arguing with me. I bring it up, and I read to you what God says. Now you have a choice. You want to accept it or not. But it's nothing to do with me. So now remember what the Torah says. The Torah said to the Jews, if you are going to follow my laws, follow my ways, and listen to everything I told you to do, not just in the heart, to do, to keep Shabbat, to put tefillin, to pray, to be modest, not to be a thief, not to be a crook, to do what the Torah said, I'm going to elevate you and make you a special nation, because you are holy, because I'm holy. This is the words of the Torah. You are holy, because I'm holy. I sanctify you to be special, spiritually. Which means, if we are not going to fulfill the condition, we're not going to follow his mitzvot, we don't listen to him, we rebel against him, as most Jews unfortunately do today, not only they're not special, they are in a worse category.
I'm not rebelling.
Not you. No,
no,
I didn't.
No,
you got me completely wrong. I didn't say you rebel.
Imagine, a child is born in a Jewish family,
right,
and another child, the neighbor, is born into a non-Jewish family.
Right.
Why should one be, like God says to the Jewish baby, I chose you, and
right,
I didn't choose you?
Do you know a little bit history? Until God chose us, we sweat very much. Not we, our fathers. Mm-hmm. Only after Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov passed all the tests and perform great ability, God came to them and said, since you follow all my tests and listen to all my orders, I'm going to benefit you by continuing the covenant that I swore to you today, to your children, to your descendants. Me and you have no merit whatsoever as far as ourselves. We don't really deserve to be different than them. We did nothing better than them. You're right. We only got lucky. The same thing in this life. You may ask, why one kid born to a billionaire and another kid born to a father that does not make even $1,000 a month, and the neighbor across the street over there make $1 billion a year? Why? It's not fair. Same thing. Or you may ask, between two Jews, I am an Israelite and somebody here that sits here is a Kohen. Why is he better than me? Because his father was a Kohen, his grandfather was a Kohen. Why? Yes, that's what God's decision. That's why I respect it. You see, the difference between me and you is that it took me also a few months to digest what I read. But then I came to the conclusion, wait a minute, who am I, the little puppet, the little fly that flies here in the air? Everything I have comes from him. I'm so limited compared to him. I read in the book of God, you are less than a Kohen. There's a Kohen, there is a Levi, there's an Israelite, there's a man, there's a woman, there is somebody with defects in his body, which is less. There's all kinds of levels of Jews. Before you go to the Goyim, among the Goyim, there is also different levels of Goyim. For instance, the worst Goyim is Amalek. We don't know who they are today because the whole world got mixed. And there are Goyim that are very good. No problem. There are seven nations in the Torah that they are the filthiest because they bow down to idols and their way was rebelling against God by bowing down to the sun and to the moon and to all kinds of statues. Because their fathers were like that, they automatically were deprived as a point of view of a divine creator. We are different because our father were different, not because we are better than them. But the Torah has a lot of warnings. Remember, it's not enough that you're born to a Jewish mother. My wife used to work in Manhattan many years ago, I think 15 years ago, 14 years ago. She was working for a famous place that sells fur coats. And one time she got from her work two tickets to a very exclusive show. Right here was $300 or $350 a ticket. So, you know, a Jew receive a gift of $350, he might as well take advantage of that. Not that I knew the singer, his name was Betty Buckley. I didn't even know who she is. But my wife said, you know, it's going to be a nice event. Let's go. So we went. So in my old days, I came with a leather jacket, jeans. I come to the place. You don't want to see the way I looked that time. So me and my wife getting there, I see a huge line of limos, Rolls Royce, all these important older people standing there, people with black tie. You know, I don't have to tell you. Here comes the two fools, comes like this. Hi, how you doing? I show him the ticket. So he looks at me like this. He got the shock of his life, the bouncer over there. He takes his flashlight, he looks at the ticket to see if it's fake. He couldn't understand how two idiots like this got such a ticket. You know, I see his face, he looks at me as an alien from a different star, this guy. So he looks at me, I said, no, open the rope, let us in. You know, you're holding me outside. So the guy says, I'm sorry, I have bad news for you. I can't let you in. So what do you mean? What is this? Discrimination? I have a ticket, what? But you do not follow the laws of this place. This place have an order here. You cannot do whatever you want here. So what's the problem? We just arrived. He flipped the ticket to the other side, and there was a list. No sneakers, no jeans, no this, no that, no. A list of no. So yeah, you have the ticket, but you can still not enter because you're not dressed properly. What's the story is belong here? Why it's belong here? Because the Torah say like this, every Jew has a ticket to the world to come. But the rest of the Mishnah says a list of Jews that will never enter the world to come, the world of eternity. Who are the Jews who will never enter there to be with God forever with their soul and enjoy the greatness of God as the Torah promised to the righteous Jews? Jews that will not do A, B, C, D, and whatever. Jews who will do will enter express. So now what do we learn? The fact that we have a Jewish mother, we were born automatically with a ticket in our hand. It's not enough. It's not enough. We are Jews. We are special. We are the chosen people. Beloni. We're not chosen. We know nothing. We have to earn it. That's what the Jews don't get. A Jew that eats pork every day and still in the business and makes sex crimes every 2 minutes is nothing chosen. He's not chosen. It's not chosen at all. God is disgusted by him. Vinny the Guido with the guns that comes home with the guns like this is much better. You know why? Vinny can make sex crimes. There's no problem. The Goyim are allowed. They're not allowed to do with their mother or sister. It's called Gilui Arayot. But a Goy, right down here in a club here, downstairs, a Goy comes into the club, Vinny is here. He finds Christine, he goes home with her to make babies, kosher, no problem. They don't get punished. And a Jew will do it. Will, yeah, that's what the Torah says. They're allowed. They have no restriction like us. Why?
I can't accept.
Why they're not allowed?
Because it doesn't make sense to me.
But the Jews doing it. Why?
No, but this argument, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I cannot buy it.
What are you going by your feelings, by your hearts, or by what the Torah says?
But the thing is, you're telling me that every Jew is born with a ticket.
Right.
So the
but you have to earn. You earn to earn the ticket.
Not Jewish. They don't even have a ticket.
No, no, no. Don't get me wrong. You. I don't know. Maybe I'm not so clear tonight.
I'm sorry, but...
Okay, I'll clarify myself. The Goyim, you forgot that 5 minutes ago I told you that the Goyim also have a world to come. They only have to keep 7 laws. A part of that...
7 laws?
God. After the flood that the whole world died, God drowned the entire people on earth. Only 8 people survived. Noah, his wife, their wives, 8 people. From them, the world restarted. Noah had one son, his name was Sem. We, the Jews, are grandchildren of this righteous person named Sem. That's why when someone hates you, he automatically becomes an anti-Semite. Why Sem? What's the connection? Because you and me are a descendants of this righteous person as the Torah describes as the son of Noah, his name is Sem. The other 2 sons, Yefet and Ham, are 2 different races. Races, and they are nothing to do with Judaism. Why? Because from Sem came Abraham. Abraham is the first Hebrew. That's why our language called Hebrew, Ivrit. Because the Torah called him Abraham ha-Ivri. Abraham the Hebrew. Why his name Hebrew? Because he was the only righteous person on earth at his generation. Hebrew means one-sided, special. Special means the whole world was bowing down to idols and searching for the real God. And Abraham was the only one who recognized the real God and follow him and listen to his orders. That's why God named him Abraham ha-Ivri. Few generations later, after his son Jacob went to Egypt and God changed his name to Israel, he had a lot of babies and children, 210 years after they came out of Egypt. And until this moment that we came out of Egypt, the whole world, with no exception, were binded to keep only 7 laws, and that's it. The Goyim, however, since they did not receive the Torah from God, only the Jews did, they still liable to keep those 7 laws until this moment. What are the 7 laws? One is to understand there is only one God and there's no other. Second, not to bow down any idols. Third, not to commit sex crimes with the 7 relatives only. By Jews, it's much larger, the restriction. Because even a single Jew and a single Jewish female, by having relation without marriage, is a very serious sin. But the Goyim are not obligated against. So they can do it as much as they want. Because God did not make them holy. You have to understand, we were like them. But now God elevated us. But it's all conditional to the fact if we are we going to listen or not. So therefore, he gave us a much harder test. Harder test, much greater reward. Easy test, not that much reward. Very simple. So now, the 7 laws. You should know there's only one God and no other. Therefore, every Christian right there has a big problem because he made God a son. It's against the 10 Commandments. God said, I have no other entity. It's me and only me. No son, no brother, no second God, no like the Greeks, they have the God of love, the God of this, the God of the ocean. None of this is legal. One God. And not only that, should not bow to any idol, no sex crimes in a family, no cutting parts of raw animals, a live animal, kill them before you slaughter them or kill them. You cannot just cut parts of their body and cook it while they're still alive, as they used to do in the old days. That's 4. 5, you should not kill. 6, you should not steal. And 7, you should make yourself a system with court and police, write down human laws that you all agree with, what we call today democracy, and listen to the laws that the majority of the people of that place decided. Why? Not to make a mess in the entire world, to make everything organized in the right order. This is the seven laws that every goy has to keep to go to heaven. You understand? Now, therefore, of course, many Jews would be much happier if they can be like Vinny and Christine. Because anyway, they're doing all these sins every day. They go to this club, to that club, to this hotel, to this party. They want to be like Vinny and Christine. But what can I do that God say, no, you're not Vinny, you're Yosef. And that's why I made you my son and I gave you holy laws. Do not dare to live like them. Don't be like them. You're going to pay the price in the end. Do not be like them. You don't have to believe me. All you have to do is open the Torah and read. You have English, Persian Torah, everything you want. Read it. It will be very clear to you. You don't have to believe me. I am just presenting it to you tonight. Tomorrow you have a job. You say everything the rabbi said last night, it's nonsense. But just to be sure, after all, there's 1% chance maybe it's a little bit reliable, let me double check. You'll be amazed what you're going to find. If you're serious, if you care about your eternity, you care about the future of your children, grandchildren, the future of your soul, the future of everything that depends on what you're going to choose after this lecture tonight. Remember, I didn't come to tell you vote for Obama or vote for Hillary. Whether you vote for him and for that, you can still go to heaven. Don't worry. I didn't come and tell you invest in this stock and not in that stock. Yeah, you lost money, you made money. No big deal. I came to throw a challenge to you. What do you think I came for so far? For what? For one thing. My job right now is to throw the truth in your face. Of course, you're emotional. You never saw it before. I'm shocking you. Most of the things you see and you're going to see in the next 10, 20 minutes is getting you even more angry. I agree. I understand 100%. It's perfectly fine. But I did my job. I threw here the truth and I left. I'm not going to make you religious. I'm not going to follow and call and send a detective to see what you're going to do. From this moment on, when I leave tonight, it's only your choice. The Torah says, I'm giving you the life and the good today, the bad and the death, and you should choose the good, that I should reward you in your end. And another place the Torah says, I'm giving you a test. I'm testing you to see what's in your heart. Do you love me or not? And another place it says, I'm testing you. I'm torturing you. I tortured your fathers 40 years in the desert. What? To test them. Are they going to stay faithful to my mitzvot and my obligation? Or are they going to rebel against it? What's this test is all about? Bottom line, to reward you in your end. What's the opposite thing of reward? I don't have to even say. So now, here is another example. We are a few days before Pesach. The Torah said Pesach must be in the springtime. Must be. Now we have a serious problem. Why? Because the sun and the moon have different years. The year of the sun is 365 days. The year of the moon is 354 days. It's 11 days gap between the sun and the moon. Every 3 years, the holiday will move by a month. 3 times 11 is 33 days. If we are going to ignore the problem, Passover, after a few years, will not be in the spring. Will be in the winter or in the summer. Came the oral Torah in Mount Sinai and told Moshe, God told Moshe, be careful not to make mistakes. How do you make sure Pesach will always be in the spring? Every 19 years you have to push 7 extra months to the calendar. That's what we do every 2 or 3 years. We push Adar Bet. We have Adar Aleph and Adar Bet. Why? This year it's a perfect example. Pesach officially should have been a month ago when it was freezing. The heat was on 75 in the house a month ago. Imagine you sit in Pesach, you're shaking in Israel, even in Israel, raining, cold, winds. The Torah called it the holiday of the spring. What, the Torah lied? Maybe this is the first mistake in the Torah. No, you got to come to the oral Torah and see the rest. What's the rest? God came to Moshe, and I'm going to translate it. At that time, God came to Moshe, the laws and the calculation of the moon, and informed him how he's going to make the leap years and the months, the extra months, because the Torah, the written Torah, called it, keep the month of the spring and you should make Pesach. Now, one time, remember, in the old days there was no calendar. Two witnesses came and saw the renewal of the moon. They went to the Jewish court and say, today it's Rosh Chodesh. We just saw the moon renewed. But the rabbis that were sitting in the court, they were prepared for today approximately around 5 in the evening that the witnesses will start showing in court. How did the rabbi know? They received it from generation to generation all the way until Moshe Rabbeinu gave this information when he came down from the mountain. God told him a secret. Why am I showing you that? Only for one reason. To show you that what I'm going to show you right here, no human being in history was able to know. Only the creator of the moon, the creator of the sun, the creator of the people, he is the only one who could have write such a thing. What is it? Here. 200 witnesses came to court that day. It was a foggy day. They came to Rabban Gamliel. He was sitting in a court waiting for them. They came a few minutes earlier. Let's say it was supposed to be Rosh Chodesh around 5. They came at 4. Rabbi, we just came to testify. We saw the renewal of the moon. Please announce today. It's the beginning of the month. Why they have to announce? Remember, there's no calendar. Because if they announce that today it's Rosh Chodesh, now we're going to count 14 days. And in the 14 days in the evening, we're going to celebrate Leil HaSeder, Passover night. We go by what the rabbis announced, because we don't have a calendar. 200 witnesses came, and Rabban Gamliel told them, you're all wrong. Not two witnesses, 200, all standing in a court. Rabbi, we saw the renewal of the moon. What are you telling us now? This is what he answered. I received from generation to generation, every time the Gemara say, Kach mekublani mibet avi abba, it means it's tradition in our hand that Moshe came down from Mount Sinai and God told him this information in the mountain. What is it? The renewal of the moon can never be less than 29 days and a half and 2/3 of the hour and 73 parts of the minute. Let's calculate. 29 days, everybody knows what it is. And a half, half a day, it's 12 hours. 2/3 of the hour, how long is that? 40 minutes. 2/3 of an hour. 73 parts of the minute, takes 60 seconds. Divide to 73. What are you getting? 29.53059000. Let's see what NASA found out. NASA, this is an original copy of NASA, Earth-Moon System. There, after years of researches, one after the other, satellites, computers, thousands of employees, billions of dollars from the taxpayer money, what did they find? The renewal of the moon, the minimum, the lowest renewal of the moon is 29.530588. What's the difference between the Americans and the Torah? 200 thousandths of a second. Take a second, cut it to 100,000 equal pieces, take two of them out, that's the difference between the Torah and what the measurements of NASA. If you think that that's the end of it, the Germans are always a little bit more yekes than the Americans. And what did they find in 1965 in Berlin? What happened? The Germans became closer to the truth. They came 29.530589. Now the difference is 100,000 of a second. Someone just told me 10 months ago in one of the lectures that he checked, and now they upgraded it to the exact number of the Torah. Since I never found it, I looked for it, but I couldn't find it. I still give it the benefits of the doubt that they are not 100% like the Torah yet, but the difference is 100,000th of a second. Now tell me please, you're all intelligent, I'm sure. Show me one person, 2,000-3,000 years ago when the Torah was given from father to son, in a generation that there was not even a calculator, no watches, no mega computers, no computers at all, no satellites. Who was able to give millions of people a book and tell them the renewal of the moon that you see over there is precise to a millionth of a second, to 100,000th of a second? Who would even know what 100,000th of a second is? Even 50 years ago, nobody knew. We don't have to go 3,000 years back. This is a clear proof, and nobody can answer against it. This is a clear, precise proof that the book that we have in our hand is the book that was given to us by the Creator of the world. And you know what? You know what's the best news? Right next to it, right next to it, it says, you are the Jew, you must keep the covenant that I made with you is the Sabbath. You must keep Shabbat. You want to belong to my nation, you want to earn eternity, I made a covenant with you, the Jewish nation, to keep the Shabbat. For those who ever made a Kiddush here, none of us even really pay attention to what we say in a Kiddush. What are we saying? We hold the Kiddush cup, and this is what we say. Veshamru bnei Israel et ha-Shabbat. And the nation of Israel kept the Sabbath. La'asot et ha-Shabbat ledorotam brit olam. To make Shabbat for eternity, for all the generations, ledorotam, brit olam, an eternal covenant between me, Beni, between me and the nation of Israel. It's an eternal agreement to prove that I created the world in 6 days, and in the seventh day I strike nothing. I did not create anything. I chose you, you, Miriam, Rachel, Yitzchak, Yosef, Yaakov, to be like me. Why you spit in my face? Why are you being ungrateful? I gave you such a gift. A goy, the Torah say, a goy is not permitted to keep Shabbat. A goy that comes to convert, the court are telling him, be very careful not to keep Shabbat until we dip you inside the mikveh. Even if they circumcised him, the goy, he is still not allowed to keep Shabbat. How many goyim were begging me in tears, Rabbi, I'm dying to keep Shabbat. And my heart was burning. I say, look at this Christina, today she's Sarah, what a tzaddeket. How many emails I get from goyim? I have one guy, Ricardo, I forgot his name already. He's sending me emails. One time he called me up, I spoke to him until 1 o'clock at night. He told me, I've been watching all your lectures in the website. I'm so close to God now, and today my life is destroyed. I say, why? What happened? What was his name? Rivaldo, Ricardo, something South American. He said, because today I heard in your lecture that you did last week that a non-Jew is not permitted to learn Torah. And I'm not Jewish. I've been learning all this Torah all these months from your website. I do not want to do anything to make God angry at me. So I'm going to have to suffer now for the rest of my life not to learn Torah. So I told him, if you love the Torah so much, why you don't want to convert? He said, I'm dying to convert. But he said, don't let me. But in the meantime, I learned that I have to keep these 7 laws. And that's what I've been doing. I dropped Christianity. I realized it's all nonsense after the debate. And today, he lives here in Midtown. And today, I keep the 7 laws. Another guy called me Cohen from Florida, married to a Christian, Sicilian, Italian woman. They have a boy together, Cohen and Goya. He calls me up. He said, Rabbi, don't ask what happened. What happened? I watched the debate with my wife. And after the debate, the next day we watched your lecture about intermarriage. And after she wants the intermarriage lecture, she's the Goya, the Sicilian. She told me, Asaf, our relationship ends right here. I love you. I care for you. You're a great husband. You gave me the best time of my life. I'm not going to rebel against God. I'm not Jewish. I cannot be with you. I'm not allowed to be with you. Take the son. Convert him to Judaism. I want him to be a Jew. So I told him, he told me, Rabbi, I want to convert her. I said, it's not going to help you. You're a Kohen. Kohen cannot marry a convert. The guy, I 100% understand you, but better late than never. Better to wake up age 25. You know, you have another 50 years to earn billions of mitzvot. Where do we want to wake up? When we be 70 years old? When? Then by then you're not going to earn any credits. Just before I finish, I'll steal 5 more minutes of your time. And then I'll give you time for questions if you are interested to ask any questions. I will give you one last example. And I think I made my point clear, even though I have more than 100 slides here, but we don't need so much. The Gemara speak about the Holocaust. I'm sure you're surprised to hear that, because the Holocaust just happened 60 years ago. The Gemara was written in Babylon 2,000 years ago. The Gemara telling us, this is what this Rabbi Yitzchak says in the Gemara. This is in Masechet Megillah, page 6. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak say, what is the meaning of the pasuk, the verse, that Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, told God about his brother Esav? Dear God, don't let Esav, the wicked Esav, to succeed in his plan. Don't let it happen. This is Germany of Edom. Esav is from Edom. That if they will be successful, they come out and destroy the entire world. Comes another rabbi, his name is Rav Chama Bar Chanina. He said there are 300 tribes in Germany of Edom. For those who know a little bit history and those who doesn't, when was Germany became a nation? When is the first time in history that the word Germany was made? How long ago?
1890.
Less than 200 years old. First, it was the barbarian tribes. Westphalia, Schlesia, Bavaria, many different tribes. There was a person named Bismarck. You heard about him, Bismarck?
Yeah.
What are you paying colleges for if you don't know those
Prussia
things? Huh? Prussia, it's one of them. Came Bismarck and united all the tribes into the German Republic, which only later became Germany. This is 1800 years before nobody even heard the word Germany before. Comes the Gemara and tell you, Esav, the brother of Yaakov, both of them came from the same mother. The Jews and the Nazis came from the same mother, Rivka. Yaakov begged God in his holy vision, don't let my brother succeed. He's gonna almost destroy the entire world. And not only that, the Gemara say, how many tribes will be in Germany? 300. How did the Gemara wrote such a thing? What human being would write? There will be a country one day named Germany. They came from Esav, and they're going to be 300 tribes. Now remember, if you find one mistake in the Torah, it's the end of it. The rest is nothing. Why? It's divine. It's 100%. One mistake makes it human. That's it. You cannot rely on it. Let's look what the cyclopedia has to tell us. This is the Hebrew cyclopedia. You can see it here in America. In English, it's no problem. Germany. Page 432 in the Hebrew cyclopedia. The collapse, the political collapse of Germany had financial outcomes. 300 tribes and the free city kept their independence strictly and made the trades very difficult and impossible. What do we care about what happened? We only care about one word, 300. 300 tribes Bismarck collected into one nation. Tell me, please, who would be able to give such information 2,000 years ago unless if he got it from God? Do you know anybody who can write such a thing? What would happen if today the cyclopedias would write that there was only 220 tribes? What would happen? Then we would come and see, you see, it's not divine. Torah made a mistake. What for? What are you trying to prove to me? Same thing when I told you in the last lecture in Great Neck. Why does the Torah say there are four animals that are exceptional from 2 million different species? The creator of the world who gave us the Torah wrote, the camel, the pig, the rabbit, and the hare is exceptional. They have only one sign that they're kosher, but they're not. They don't have the two signs that necessary. How did he know? What person knows 2 million species to be able to promise such a thing? Just before he's going to die, it's going to be much more new species that they always come up because they're all mixed together and there's always new species coming out. How did he know there's only four exceptional? If we would find the fifth one today, it would be the end of Judaism. How did he know to write that the Western world will never fall down? How? Who can write in a book there are four different worlds? Three of them will fall easily. One can never fall down because I am God protecting it. Nobody will knock it down. The Babylonian Empire came to destroy the first temple 2600 years ago. They destroyed everything. They left the Western world standing. The Greeks came just after and they burned the entire Beit HaMikdash. They left the world standing. The Romans came all the way from Italy to destroy the second temple. They destroyed everything. They left the Western world happy. Jerusalem had a critical earthquake that destroyed all the houses in Jerusalem. The Western world did not move, even though there is no cement between the bricks. Nothing. It's just standing based on its weight. 9 times Jerusalem was covered with sand. Only later the archaeologists dig the wall out of it. And what happened? It never fell down. The Muslims 1400 years ago came to build the mosque right where the Beit HaMikdash was. They had a problem. The city was very low. The mountain was very high. The old Arabs couldn't climb 10 flights of stairs to get to the mosque. So they had two choices. One is to shave the mountain and make it lower, which is a week or two of work. Bring 1,000 people with shovels and they're all going to dig it out and make it lower. And that's it. Build the mosque. So instead of going 100 stairs, they're only going to climb 10, 20 stairs and they're going to be there. What's easier? To shave the mountain, which is about 1,000 feet by 1,000 feet, to shave it, cut it by half, lower it, and build your mosque, or to rise the entire city of Jerusalem by making arches and making another floor, and arches and another floor, and elevate the entire city of Jerusalem to make it convenient for the older people to climb to the mosque. What makes more sense? Who's going to be the fool that's going to do 1,000 times more work? For what? Because there's only one word in the Torah, a divine book. God said nobody can touch the wall. If they will shave the mountain, the side of the mountain is the wall. They will have to shave the wall with it. They will lower the wall. Thank you. They will lower the wall, and then the prophecy that the Western world will collapse will become false. Since God promised the world will always stay there forever because I'm protecting it, he got the entire thousands of Muslims. He fooled them. They elevated the entire city. If you go next time to Jerusalem, go in the tunnels underneath and you'll see the arches that I'm talking about that they built. Why? It will be much easier to lower the mountain. But if they lower the mountain, the Torah will have the first mistake. And God promised, nobody will ever find mistake in my book. Why? I want you to keep the book. I want you to be faithful. I want you to appreciate. I want you, what we call today, to be religious, not to go against. Be'ezrat Hashem, I hope, even though you know time is always the biggest enemy, and it doesn't let us do whatever we want, and time is up, so I'm going to give you maybe 2-3 minutes if you have any specific questions. Or, yes?
Just one thing that usually after lectures, a lot of people come up to me and say, oh, there's something that didn't make sense, or there's something that, you know, that I'm always unclear about, or something that I don't think that what he said was right. And I said, I didn't want to ask him. I'm just, just to put everything out there, ask the question.
It's just an excuse, don't worry. It's just an excuse.
Right, before we get to the questions, I just want to make sure everybody understands that we have weekly things in Great Neck for anybody that wants to come and learn on any subject on Thursday nights. We're also going to start one for the girls. So this shouldn't just be something that you come once and that's it, you forget about it. We want to continue this and people coming to continue learning. The only way a person's truly going to grow is on a continual basis. And we're trying to provide that in Great Neck, with personal tutors that will help you develop and continue learning and succeeding. One other thing, I want to make sure every single person here puts down their name, email address, phone number, so we can contact you for future events. And also, we want to do seminars, and we want to do like a weekend stuff together. So, you know, everybody will join. But now we'll go with questions.
Thank you, Rama.
And I also want to thank Rama. Thank you so much for allowing us to have it here. Really went out of his way for it. And Rav Mizrahi, I want to let everybody know, I personally became more observant about 13 years ago because Rav Mizrahi used to come to Great Neck. A long time ago, and he used to... And continually, for the last 13 years, he's been inspiring Jews and constantly giving over. And if you only knew what this man does, he gives up of himself for the Jewish people for nothing. He doesn't get paid for it. I just want everybody to know that he does it purely out of his purity of his heart for the Jewish people. And I'm testifying to that myself. So this man goes to sleep 3 o'clock in the morning, wakes up, I don't know, early, and the entire day is only dedicating to the Jewish people. And again, every single person here, you have questions, right now is the time to ask.
Now it's, we're here already.
And if you don't have, and if you don't want to ask in private, you want to ask in private, Rabbi Mizrahi has... Through email, through...
Even call. Now, after the lecture, you
after
can speak
lecture,
to me in person.
Any question, whatever you want.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Yeah.
We're seeing in the Gemara and in the Zohar said there's 9 billion stars right now. Today, the scientists have been...
Not 9 billion. It says 10 to the power of 19. It's Gemara in Brachot, page 32.
And what about the Zohar? It says in the Zohar also, so...
Yeah, the Zohar I showed the page of the Zohar, yes.
Okay, we said before that if there's one mistake that they find in the Torah, then
right,
the whole thing goes down. Okay, what about creation, you know, 6 days? Now, I know someone came out with a solution to the 6 days, but, you know, the whole thing with evolution, for example, and dinosaurs, okay, dinosaurs, they said 10 in with the limb in the pasuk.
Right.
But, you know, the fact is that there is a few hundred million years and
okay, there are two ways to prove it. Easy and hard one.
So a short one. Dilation, I think.
Okay, I'll answer you. It will take exactly a minute. There are two kinds of science. There are objective science and speculative science. Science that is objective, it's math, things that can be proven without a doubt. Science that is speculative is based on assumption and speculations. Now, I'll give you an example. There's two ways to prove that whatever you heard in your lifetime from the scientist is all nonsense. Two ways. One, in a 4-hour argument, which I have it on my website. I once had a debate with Professor Levine from the university about evolution, and in the end, that was in one of the seminars. He got on the stage and he admitted that he has second thoughts about all his career teaching evolution in a seminar in front of all the audience. But I have today a much easier way. I wish I knew it then. I wouldn't go into 4 hours argument. Because, you know, I had to argue with him about the extrapolation, carbon-14, all the ways that they're using to trick the people that the world is billions or millions of years old. But there's a much easier way. Let's say, what's your name?
Ronnie.
We are all the people in this room will have to guess how old are you. We have to guess. So he's going to say 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 70, 80, 90, 12, 1, 3. Each one of us gives a different opinion to how old are you. Is it possible to think that each one of us is right, or in the best scenario, maybe only one of us is right?
I mean, obviously one of you will be right, because if 100 people come out with a number, then one of them will get it right.
Well, you're wrong, because we could be all wrong. No indication that all of us will be one of us right. One thing you know for sure, one thing you could swear right there, that if anybody here is right, it will be only one. For sure, not more than one person here will be right. Why? Because if he say 20 and he say 21, they cannot be right, both of them, right? You either 20 or you 21, right? If I say you 30 and he say you 20, can we be both right?
What if two people say 29?
Oh, that's one opinion. It's not two people. It's one opinion. So now here is the point. Go and check in the last 30 years. All the universities that you know, all the scientists that publish their research, they're all using the same formula and the same methods to use their proof. Each one of them came with a different results than the other. One scientist said the world is 300 trillion years old. Another one say 300 million. One scientist say 10 million. One scientist say 10,000. Go and see that not even once two scientists from two different universities came with the same age. Now tell me, as an intelligent person, if I have 500 scientists, 500 different researchers, each one of them claim the world is a different age, how would I waste a minute of my time with those fools? You tell me.
Well, there is a difference between 500 people coming out with a different age.
With the same techniques they're using.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Method,
yeah.
Every experimental method, you will always find an error. When you measure the size of this cupboard, you're always going to come with a percentage error. So the question is, are the errors just one?
Did you listen to yourself? Percentage error, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, 1% different, I wouldn't argue.
I was a scientist.
Okay, go ahead.
The point is that if the scientists, 500 scientists are coming out with a different age, and the age varies from 100 million years to 200 million years, and 500 different numbers between 100 to 200 million years, then obviously they are very, very different. But all of them have a minimum of 100 million years and a maximum of 500 million years.
Not true.
No, I'm just...
I once myself watching Discovery Channel, that in one show they say the world is 10 million years old, and another time I watched...
When you say the world, you mean the Earth or the universe?
The Earth.
Okay.
The Earth is, in one according to one show in Discovery Channel, 10 million. And in one show, 300 trillion years ago, when the Earth was shifting, and they started to give you all kinds of assumptions, how it started. I actually have a clip, which
they
is...
They said the universe is 15 billion. It can't be, the Earth can't be older than
15 billion, 300 trillion, 10 million, 10,000. There's some scientists that say the world is only a few thousand years old.
Yeah. I know it's going to lead to... I feel bad because we ordered food. A lot of nobody ate.
We forgot
so
about the food. I didn't mind that you eat while I'm speaking. I wish I knew.
So I'm
you
saying,
can
like,
eat.
I don't, I, just before... We're gonna eat in a few minutes. Just Rama wanted to say a few words. Rama.
All right. We're going to continue me and you later. Okay. Any more questions? No, before we take the opportunity. No more. Everything is clear here.
You mentioned about the Pesach always falling in spring.
Right.
Sometimes it falls like in early March.
Depends. If March is warm, if spring started, then we don't push another month into the calendar, because it's fine. It's spring. If it's still cold, once we push another month, we postpone Pesach by another 30 days. Then it falls in a warm time.
But solar calendar is still about spring.
We go by Hebrew spring, not by English
by Israel.
Spring. By Israel, yeah. Okay, any more questions? Yes, questions.
Okay, so just like we have a little question based on what she asked before.
Yeah.
When the Jew doesn't follow what he's supposed to do, he has the potential to come back maybe as one of the Goyim later on
and no.
live that life?
A Jew almost always will be reincarnated if he gets another chance to be born as a Jew. With one exception, which I don't want to say what it is, I don't want to ruin your night here, but there's one exception to it. But generally, the Jews always come back as Jews. Yes.
So what is the exception?
I don't want to say it in front of the camera.
I'm sorry. Mr. Rama,
they don't finish the
question. Yeah. What's the rush? Let them. They're already here. You know, it's an opportunity. Let them ask all the questions. Like he said, I don't want to leave, and tomorrow the people say we have a lot of questions. No, any more questions? You probably have more questions for me, no? You, everything is clear.
My questions will take a long
time. Will take a long time. Okay, you can call me and ask me the questions. Okay, no, any more? Thank you very much. Woo! Good night.
First of all, thank you everyone for coming. I'm glad you all made it up. Sorry that it's kind of late. I don't know, you have to go back to wherever.
Thank you.
I'm glad you made it. And you're probably a little tight and you're probably really hungry.